Hello, welcome to the Crash MotoGP podcast. And if you thought that Qatar was fairly quiet, Portimao was very different. Yes, we had a action-packed weekend on the Algarve. And joining me as ever is Pete McLaren and Rob Jones. Pete, how are we after that weekend?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Jordan. Yeah, I think, as we said last week, we knew there were going to be some surprises, didn't we? But it was trying to pick what they might be. But definitely some big ones this weekend.
Rob, what were your thoughts on the weekend? It was fairly eventful in certain points.
It was action-packed for sure. A lot of grey racing. A lot of drama towards the end of the Grand Prix that we probably didn't see coming. But a lot of battling between the top riders. And obviously, Acosta was one of the stars of the show again. And there was a lot of unfortunate scenarios as well with Maverick Vinales crashing out on the last lap. But it was a very intense but exciting weekend, I thought.
Exactly. And just to give you an update, so it was Jorge Martin that won the Grand Prix. It was a very dominant performance from him. But on the Saturday, we had Maverick Vinales take his first, I can say in brackets, his first Aprilia win, because the record books don't show that because it was a sprint race. We also see Marc Marquez take a first podium for Gresini Racing and second place with Jorge Martin again on the podium in the sprint. But it was a very interesting weekend from the start. You know, it was a strange Friday. The track was very, how do you say, Pete? It was very dirty.
I was just going to say, it's almost like Qatar. Very strange, where you get this sort of film of dust that sort of settles, not just on the track, but over the whole city, everywhere. You know, the higher car you get to it in the morning, it's covered in dust. And so, yeah, it made it pretty slippery offline. I think they did what they could to clean it up. But yeah, certainly it was well, the Moto E session, wasn't it? I don't think they struggled with that on the Friday morning. The Moto 3 session got cancelled with about 10 minutes to go because they just realised they need to go out and clean the track. And when they finally got underway, a certain Marc Marquez was top of the timesheets, wasn't he? So for the first time on a Ducati. So yeah, that was a bit of a landmark moment for him. And yeah, as you guys were saying, he played a role in the headlines all weekend, really, didn't he, as well as Acosta?
Yeah, I think we'll just get straight into that. Is the big talking point of the weekend, of course, Rob, Marc Marquez and Pecco Bagnaia clashing in the Grand Prix. It was something that, if you looked at the start of the Grand Prix, they got very close on lap one through turns 5 and 6. But then in the Grand Prix, we seen them collide, and it was deemed a racing incident. And I think that's the best thing possible. You know, we don't want to see this dragged out. But, you know, each rider essentially isn't taking the blame, and that's very normal. But what did you think of the whole incident?
I think, obviously, we expected those two to be racing hard this year and potentially something like this to happen, given what's at stake. Obviously, Marc Marquez has gone to Ducati. Yes, he's on the year-old bike, but knowing Marc Marquez, he wants to prove a point and he wants to race the likes of Bagnaia and Martin as hard as he can. And for Bagnaia, knowing he's got Marquez on a similar bike, it's a chance for him as well to really prove himself against someone of Marquez's talent and reputation. It was a good move from Marquez. It's one of those where he did run slightly wide, but not wide enough, in my opinion, to sort of give up the corner. I think he was sort of still just about on line and could expect to take the line that he did. Obviously, Bagnaia was very aggressive, fair, but aggressive. And it's just one of those where two riders wanting that position and wanting to be ahead of the other one and inevitable contact. I think a racing incident was fair. But it was the talk of the paddock after, was for sure. And it's, you know, whether you think Marquez is at fault for some of the incidents he has or not, you know, he's always in the limelight. And I think for Ducati, it's something they'll want to get on top of. And not have this happen again, especially for the factory team, for Bagnaia going for the title again. It's not something they'll want, and to have Ducati riders colliding is never a good thing. But it was very dramatic, and I think going forward, they'll want to try and put a stop to that, which would be hard to keep a lid on it, for sure.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Yeah, like you say, you know, Ducati riders fighting with each other. There's one rider who benefits from it all, and it was Jorge Martin. And this aspect, you know, when you look at the World Championship, arguably his two biggest rivals coming into this season were going to be Pecco and Mark. Would he probably seen after the race that they had taken each other out? I seen the clip from the cool down room, and he was just kind of like, oh, that happened. He was like, well, that's just even better for him. And Pete, when you think of the what happened, you know, it's very early in the season, but you know, how will Ducati need to manage this relationship? Because it can be a bit tricky, you know, as we progress on in the season.
As you guys said, isn't it nightmare scenario for both of them to come away with 0 points? I mean, that's, and as Pecco said, he was angry about that. Not talking about the move itself, he obviously wasn't happy with that, but he was angry about not getting any points. And yeah, I think that was a surprise, wasn't it? As Rob said, the move itself, and you've said this as well, Jordan, it was a racing incident, but the context of it, where you've got Pecco, the reigning champion, the title favourite, on the back foot a bit, mistaking the sprint, and then sort of off pace in the Grand Prix. Martin, as you say, his main rival up the front. You don't, you know, the last thing you then need is to throw away, you know, well, it would have been fourth place, wouldn't it, with Maverick then dropping out. It was fifth at the time, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah.
You know, it's to throw away 10-plus points in an instant like that. And, yeah, you know, I asked Pecco, did you think he was a bit risky? And he insisted it wasn't. He said, look, you know, you race, you see a gap, you go for it. And, you know, Mark said, yeah, it was a racing incident. But he also said that, look, the Ducati can see all the data. And he kind of implied, he didn't say what the data showed, but he kind of implied that the data would be on his side on that one, meaning, I guess, that although Mark might have been a little offline, as Rob said, that perhaps Pecco did something different, that it wasn't just a case of one rider going offline, the other one taking a normal line. I think they were both probably offline. And I think in that scenario, the guy behind has got to be, you know, aware that the guy in front maybe can't see him. Now, who knows, as you say, you're not talking about normal riders here. You're talking about two multi-champions. All of this, Mark coming into Ducati, the world championship battle. Okay, Mark's not in it at the moment, but maybe by the end of the year he will be. But end result is disaster for both of them, isn't it? And it's given Martin a decent points lead, really, early on.
It has. And like you say, it depends what way you look at it. You know, there's so many different TV angles from it. And the broadcast that we seen instantly, it looks like, oh, they might have just collided. But then when you see, like, the alternative camera angles, you know, one angle looks like Bagnaia, it's clearly understeers into Marquez, and you know that. Then there's another angle that shows that Marquez is kind of closing the door. It's just not a great situation early on in the season. But I will say, for me, I know everyone else, fantastic drama. It is brilliant. We want to see this happen. And, you know, it just makes 2 weeks' time in Coda even more special. And I think we could see, you know, Marquez was very fast this weekend. He did have, well, in total, four crashes. And Rob, you know, it's kind of a return, not of old of Marquez, but, you know, he's found the limits of the Ducati, but he is fast. Like we say, he did get a podium in the sprint as well. So what do you think going ahead for him when it gets to Texas? You know, his expectation is,
I think no matter what bike he's on, going to Texas is going to be, whether it's the sprint or the Grand Prix, he's going to want to win there. Especially after getting a no score in the Grand Prix at Portimao, I think he'll want to put big points on the board and also just show Ducati that, you know, the incident isn't going to bother him. We know the incident is not going to bother someone like Marquez, and he's going to race as hard as he can as soon as he's back on track. But I think for him, you know, yes, there were some crashes, just a case of finding the limit. And even though he had those crashes, like you said, he was very, very fast.
Yeah.
You know, he could, he Maybe if he'd started higher up, could have won the sprint. It's, you know, a big if, but he could have. And he was in contention. And in both races, he made great starts, which is promising as well for him. So I think if he qualifies well and shows good pace in Texas, which we, I think, all expect him to do, I think he'll be a big challenger for not only the podium, but he'll want to win there.
As Rob said, Pete, you know, that mistake in qualifying ultimately really did. It hampered him over the whole weekend. And, you know, he, on paper, Frankie Carchetti tweeted, you know, he pretty much had the best race pace, but if you don't start high enough, it's not going to favour you. So are you the same as Rob? Do you think if he's going to Texas, he's going to win?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as you guys have said, I mean, it was the qualifying, wasn't it? The qualifying really hurt him. That came from the crash. But all of his crashes this weekend, they weren't actually from riding over the limit, were they? They were funny stuff with the bikes, the ride height devices, his foot slipping off in warm-up, the gearbox or the gears going into the turn five in practice, and then the clash with Bagnaia. He hasn't actually fallen off from sort of overriding it this weekend. So it's easy to look on paper and go, oh, four crashes, it's the old Mark. But they were very different sort of things, weren't they? They were just sort of learning the bike and all the buttons and everything else that you have to get used to. It was quite funny because he was asked, well, you're learning a new bike, and also Pedro Acosta is learning a new bike as well. And Mark said, yeah, but you know, he's a teenager, isn't he? As you get older, it's not as easy to learn things. And also, as he said, more seriously, Mark's got 10 years on the Honda, isn't he, that he needs to sort of refresh and now move on to the Ducati style. And the moment where he has the problem doing that is the time attacks, is when he's pushing, which is when pretty much we saw, you know, most of these incidents that he has. But yeah, I think he's going to be up there, isn't he? I think in COTA this is, as you guys were saying, he had great pace. I think he struggled with the front tyre pressure in the race, you know, from the bad start, from starting, what was it, about eighth on the grid. That gave him the front tyre pressure problems. Yeah. We saw most of them spaced out, didn't we, at the front of the field, really. So I think everyone was suffering to a certain degree, but definitely he was struggling with that. And I think you're right, if he had, you know, if he qualified higher up, he had the pace on paper to win. A little bit slow, last sector, main straight, but other than that, quick as anyone everywhere else.
Yeah, and so we'll continue with Ducati riders before we get on to Pedro Acosta. A good weekend for Andrea Bastianini. You know, he took pole position, Rob, and unfortunately for him in the sprint, it was the start that really hampered his race then. You know, he couldn't get I believe he disengaged the right height device at the start, and he couldn't get it back down, and he obviously, so much torque going to the rear tyre, he's at a disadvantage compared to everyone else, and it kind of ruined his sprint. But a Grand Prix, a second place, you know, he had a race-long battle with Maverick Viñales, was kind of closing in on Jorge Martin towards the end, but it's fair to say that Andrea Bastianini is back to what we know.
Yeah, it was a really, really good weekend for Bastianini. Obviously, he'd had great results in Qatar, and we sort of thought maybe he'd be able to perform the same way he did in Portimao there. Wasn't quite on the pace, but Portimao to secure pole position, you know, given the record the likes of Bagnaia have, and Martin especially, that was a very, very good result. And we all know that this is a big year for Bastianini, so it doesn't seem like the pressure is too much. In fact, it's actually seems to be pushing him on. And he had the problem in the sprint, and that was probably took away a potential podium. You know, we didn't know the pace he had in the Grand Prix, but then seeing how fast he was, and he was closing in on Viñales and then closing in on Martin at the end. And we know that Bastianini has very good late pace. You know, he always seems to pump in a faster slap. And again, if that issue didn't happen at the beginning of the sprint, it's one of those where he could have been better positioned and then mounted a late charge.
Yeah. And like you say, in terms of someone that has great pace, Pete, we talked about it off camera about Pedro Acosta. It's almost expected. You think he's going to be quicker in the sprint because, you know, it's a shorter format. But my God, the first podium of his MotoGP career came in the Grand Prix. And he's the third youngest ever in the Premier class to get a podium. What did you make of that race yesterday from him?
Yeah, it was amazing, wasn't it? I mean, it was a big test coming into this weekend with no testing before it. So this was where we were going to really see how quickly can he just get straight in and adapt to a new circuit on a MotoGP bike. Then you had the dusty FP1, which almost, you know, cost a bit of track time for everybody. But still, as you say, he's up there and significantly top KTM as well, wasn't it? That was the thing. It was, yeah, okay, podium is obviously a fantastic achievement either way. but to be the top KTM ahead of guys like Brad Binder and Jack Miller. Jack Miller also having a decent weekend, wasn't he, this weekend? That was really impressive. And yeah, I think, you know, just that it's just every time he gets on that bike, he's going up a level, isn't he? And there's so many similarities between what Acosta's doing and what Marc Marquez did back in 2013, isn't there? And as Marc Marquez said after the race on Sunday, he said, look, you know, I told you guys, he's going to be on the podium. He's going to win races this year. And let's see about the championship. And so far, it's turning out that way. I think, you know, no one's going to be surprised if he continues at this rate that he is winning races sometime this year. And if you're winning races and you're on the podium, you're fighting for the championship.
Exactly. And Rob, did you think when you seen Acosta coming through the pack, it was maybe a story of Qatar again, that his rear tire was going to go? But incredible. He was able to keep that pace. And when you seen the onboards of him following Brad Binder, he was so close to his rear, but it was safe. And when he got past, like Pete said, Jack Miller and Brad, he then focused on Marc Marquez and immediately just got rid of him. He just disappeared from him and then set charge on Pecco. And I just couldn't believe the calmness of how he was able to just manage the race. It was truly special.
Yeah, there was a case of, I think at the beginning, we had that sort of worry that maybe, because it did look like he was pushing a little bit more than everyone else, because it's his speed advantage over the two KTMs. There was that point very early on where he was behind Miller and Binder, and then Miller sort of ran wide after Binder went down the inside at turn one.
Yeah.
And it looked like Acosta was really, really pushing. But the biggest thing for me was the fact that so often post-race we hear a lot of the riders saying they couldn't overtake because of front tire pressures, you know, and the dirty air or the aero was causing too many issues. But for Acosta, it was not only the speed he had over riders like Binder, Marc Marquez, Bagnaia, which was incredible to see, but it was the ease, especially with Binder and Marquez, the ease in terms of getting past them. It was It was as if they were in a different race, really. And then he obviously tried to go early on Bagnaia, then sort of studied him, and then made the move with five laps to go. And it was just an incredible race to not have any experience of Portimao on a MotoGP bike and to do that. It's just, you know, whether it's Moto3, Moto2 or MotoGP, in every class he's hit the ground running, and it's just, it speaks volumes to his talent, which it seems like anything is possible this season. And I think even at COTA, it's the sort of circuit that will, I think, benefit Acosta, because there's so many different elements to that circuit that I think, again, it could play into his hands. And his performance was probably for the second week running just the standout performance of the weekend.
Yeah, and Pete, you get to hear him at the weekend. I think his attitude is just so, it's, how can we say, Akiyo molds these riders a certain way and he makes them a real personality. And I think he's just, he doesn't really give anything away. And I think that's brilliant. But there's a certain kind of confidence, a little bit of cockiness to it. And I think it's such a breath of fresh air from MotoGP. What was he like after the podium? Did he seem, you know, just cool, calm, collected?
Yeah, he takes everything in his stride, doesn't he? You know, he doesn't get himself ahead of himself, if you like, when something goes well. And on the other hand, he doesn't sort of beat himself up when things go badly. He's very, very sort of level-headed about it all, isn't he? And as you say, people have been trying to ask him for expectations all the time. You know, what do you think you can do? And he just won't get into that. He's just, you know, we're here to learn. We're on our way, is his sort of phrase. You know, we're improving all the time. And he's a funny guy. He's sort of witty. He's pretty confident in what he's doing. I interviewed Hervé Poncharal on Thursday, actually. Seems like a long time ago now. But yeah, Thursday, just before the event began. And, you know, he used words like humble to describe him as well. He's like a sponge, he said, which is the phrase that they're also using in the Tech Toi team. He just soaks up the information, processes it, and comes back better every day, every day, every day. And he's really impressing everyone, isn't he? With his bike control as well. You know, there's photographers saying, you know, they see him on track, just like, wow, you know, is he the front sliding, the rear sliding, the bike's always moving. It's impressive.
It is. And I think he's just going to get better. And this year, it's just going to be such a fun thing to watch for everyone. You know, it's only the second round and he's just, I wouldn't say exceeding expectations, but he's just living up to the hype that people have put on him, and it shows that he is the rider we've been looking for a generation you know, as you say, Pete, with the bike control and just how everything looks, it looks a bit manic, but it looks so controlled at the same time. It's just, yeah, he is just an incredible talent, and I can't wait to see him when he gets to Texas. Like Rob says, you know, it's a track that who knows what he can do on it. You know, if he just takes the same approach, expect another great weekend. Speaking of great weekends, Pete, Maverick Vinales, now the record books, you know, he did win the sprint. He is technically the first rider to win on three different manufacturers in the premier class in the modern era. And it was going so well for him in the Grand Prix until the last lap and he had a gearbox issue. Talk us through what happened there, because it was so heartbreaking for him.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah, we didn't realise at the time, but he'd been fighting this issue since, I think, about lap six of the race. So actually, that just shows how amazing his speed was. And I think coming back to what we said at the start of the show and the surprises, I think Maverick is right up there with surprise of the weekend, given where he was in Qatar, sort of back end of the top 10, wasn't it? And quite a long way behind Aleix and still struggling with the bike from winter testing, it seemed, you know, this new setup and balance that he was looking for on the new Aprilia. And suddenly, bang, he gets to Portimao, as you were saying before we came on air, Jordan. You know, he'd been saying that oh yeah, it's going to be good for me, but I think people were not so sure. And then he gets on track and he's flying. So he was quick all weekend. It wasn't a fluke by any means, was it, that he won the sprint? He had the speed there. As you say, the record books won't show it. Yeah, I think that's a shame, isn't it? I think, you know, make it two-thirds distance and call it a Grand Prix. But yeah, the record books don't show it, but he has won now on the Aprilia. And as he said, it's a big relief, big weight off his shoulders. And then coming to your question in the main Grand Prix itself, yeah, heartbreak, really. Just he couldn't get into top gear, fifth to sixth gear, just wasn't going in from lap six onwards. So he was repeatedly tapping the gear shifter to try and get it into top gear on the straight. And he said it would take five, six goes, and then it would go into gear. So it was in sort of neutral sometimes, and he was hitting the RPM limit and all these sort of things, which we couldn't spot, could we? All of us watching the race on TV, because he was still lapping pretty much as quick as Jorge Martin.
Yeah.
And as Maverick said himself, look, you know, I could have gone several tenths a lap quicker. I mean, without these problems. And yeah, he only needed to do one more lap, didn't he? And he would have at least got that second place. But yeah, coming out the last corner, same thing again, lost the drive. And this time, you know, Bastianini went by, put his leg out, didn't he? And we were all unsure why. That was just to warn people behind that he was losing drive. And then it seems like he was still searching for gears all the way down the straight, got into turn one, went down to second gear, still nothing. And then he said, so he sort of ran a bit wide, didn't he, onto the curbs and things like that. And then when he sort of opened the throttle, suddenly it went into gear. But of course, he's opening the throttle at the same time and it spat him off. So lucky not to be hurt also. It was a bit of an awkward sort of fall, wasn't it? But yeah, what a shame he came within a lap of getting that finish. But as he said, he was trying to put a brave face on it and say, look, if it's going to happen, I'd rather it happens when I'm at the front. He said, if you go through all that and you're in 10th place and it happens, it's even worse. So he said, look, you know, I'm confident. I'm, you know, we're going to win again. And I mean, he's another guy that likes Kota. So maybe he's another one to watch out for the next round.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction. And free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
As Pete said, you know, it was a bit of a worry for Maverick after Qatar. You know, he was just kind of in no man's land, and he actually came into this weekend pretty sick. He had, I believe it was gastroenteritis. He didn't look great. You know, he was wearing a mask constantly when you seen him on the TV broadcast, but the speed was there, and, you know, the signs were there from last year. He was fast around Portimao, and when you look at the other Aprilias, Maverick was by far the quickest Aprilia this weekend.
Yeah, it was a case of, it was actually sort of role reverse from Qatar, where Aleix had the speed, could have won the sprint, was a favourite for the Grand Prix, and obviously Vinales second last year at Portimao. We knew that it would be a good circuit for him, but the caveat to that was the pre-season was a struggle for him, just getting used to the 24 bike, and then with Qatar being a continuation, it was sort of unclear. Obviously, Vinales is an extremely talented rider, and even with, like you said, he was sick, and he's, you know, it's well documented over the winter that he'd lost 3 kilos, and then he lost another 2 going into the weekend. So to be that unwell and perform the way he did just shows the speed that he did have, and obviously to put that speed into practice on Sunday and, you know, be able to basically, he was going to finish second, I think, even with those issues. So it just shows how strong he was. It'll be gutting that he didn't get the reward for it.
Yeah.
But we do know that. And it's the same thing with Aprilia. Is 1 week it's Aleix, 1 week it's Vinales. If they could just put some consistency, they've both got the pace. And Vinales showed that. But to do that while he was unwell was a very impressive ride. Just very unfortunate that he had those issues in the Grand Prix.
Yeah. And Pete, it isn't the first time we believe that this has actually happened for Maverick, or Aleix mentioned that it happened last season with his gearbox. You know, Aprilia need to sort of fix these issues. You know, there is the odd teething issue with the Aprilia, we see it, and, you know, if they can sort this out going into Texas, what do you think they can do?
Yeah, I mean, gearbox issues are scary, aren't they? I mean, engine issues are scary enough, but at least you've got the option of pulling the clutch in. Sometimes with gearboxes you don't, do you? So yeah, they'll obviously, it's something that they need to get on top of. As you say, it sounds like it was similar symptoms, so difficulty engaging the gear that he had at a track last year or a race last year, and it's sort of come back. So yeah, they'll want to get on top of that ASAP. But the speed in the bike is there, as Rob said. It's been fast now at two tracks with two different riders. You know, Vinales has got this confidence. It's been a long time, isn't it, since he's won a race. I mean, he's a 9-time winner. We sort of forget, don't we? 9-time MotoGP winner, and he's waited a long time to get this Aprilia victory. So, you know, and let's wait for the response from Aleix. It's bound to sort of fire him up, I'm sure, and the whole team. Aleix didn't make any excuses. He said, look, I'm not riding very well this weekend. It's just not really flowing for me here. And he was full of praise for what Maverick had done. So, let's see where they go with this. Miguel Oliveira, the home hero, unfortunately for him, he's still not quite there, is he? I mean, the support he gets at Portimao is incredible. And it's a real shame that he can't or he couldn't be more competitive this weekend. He said there's still a long way from being comfortable with the 24 bike. Obviously, he's on the factory bike. So that was a shame for him. But certainly the good news for Oliveira is that Vinales is a much more similar rider in terms of riding style to him than Aleix. Yeah. So the fact that Vinales has got something sorted now means that I'm sure the Trackhouse team will be going, right, what is it that Maverick did? What were the settings? What was the technique? Whatever it is. And there's a decent chance that Miguel will be able to get that to work, or at least help address some of the issues that he's having in the next race.
Yeah, Pete said, Miguel Oliveira gets incredible support in Portimao. He actually finished the Grand Prix in 9th place, so not a bad result, but I think, you know, he would have expected more. Just to quickly touch on two other riders. So Marco Bezzecchi, Fabio Di Giannantonio, Rob. When you look at it on paper, Bezzecchi finished the Grand Prix in 6th and seemed to be a bit better compared to Qatar, but still not where he wants to be. You know, he was on the podium here last year. How did you assess the VR46 riders weekend? It was fairly quiet.
Like you said, it was a quiet weekend for them. Bezzecchi did look faster, and he seemed to have a bit of an advantage over Dijon Antonio, which for him will be good. Coming after Qatar, it seemed like Dijon Antonio had adapted to the 23 bike a lot better, and obviously Bezzecchi's had some struggles with his riding style. Still not the Bezzecchi we know, which is disappointing, because the races where he was very strong last year, and there was plenty of them, he was very, very difficult to beat. On his day, he was as dominant as anyone last season. So we're still sort of waiting for Bezzecchi to just click with the 23 bike. It's not happened yet, but I think there was definitely signs that he's getting closer to where he needs to be. Qualifying showed that, and then the sprint wasn't ideal. It seemed like he didn't quite have the start that he wanted, but then the Grand Prix was a lot better. So I thought he performed well. Not the weekend Dijon Antonio would have wanted, though. He was sort of on the, well, just lackluster compared to the other Ducatis. So he'll want to put that right in Texas.
And speaking of a bit of a difficult weekend, Pete, Honda, it was a very reality check, let's just say that, for them. You know, Joao Mir finished the Grand Prix in 12th. I actually believe, you know, it was actually a really good ride in the end. You know, he had a first lap collision with Frankie Morbidelli, and you can visibly see the marks on Joan's leathers on his bike. He wasn't really happy after the race, I'm led to believe, with Morbidelli. But he was really the only shining light for Honda. The rest weren't up to it.
That's right, Jordan. Yeah, I mean, I think at Qatar, there was some promise there, wasn't there, for the Honda guys. I think it looked like they sort of closed the gap, especially on Yamaha, let's say, and sort of matched the pace of improvement by the guys at the front. They hadn't really closed that much, but at least they'd matched it. And, you know, with all the concessions and everything, there was some decent sort of hope there. But yeah, really, they struggled, didn't they, this weekend? And the same issues that really they've had, you know, for several years, the rear grip issue, it was sort of really apparent. That being said, Luca Marini feels it's not only that. He thinks it's also a bit of turning in the middle of the corner. But basically, that's for guys that have been on the bike for a while, like Nakagami, he's certain it's the rear grip. And it just really sort of highlighted it at Portimao. Obviously, this was the first time the race riders got to try it really on a European track. Marini had a bit of a private test at Jerez, didn't he? But this was the first time the other guys had got to try out on a European track rather than the big sort of hot testing tracks in Sepang and Qatar. So, yeah, shame for them, really. I mean, it just shows that it's going to be a long time, I think, before they're back up and fighting at the front.
And Rob's, we'll keep on the theme of the Japanese manufacturers. Yamaha, they did look actually a bit better this weekend. They both got into Q2, which was a positive step. You know, Quartararo detailed that on Thursday. That was his main goal for, you know, to start the weekend, really, and they achieved that. The Grand Prix, it was okay. You know, Quartararo, he finished 7th in the end, and it just didn't really see him. That's the only thing I could say. You know, he just kind of was by himself, really.
Yeah, it was a surprise, but a pleasant surprise to see Yamaha show a bit of speed, especially over one lap. Because last year, you know, we all know that the bike is not where it needs to be. And Quartararo, as a result, has been suffering because we know the talent he's got and he should be running at the front of the field. But the race pace was at least somewhat promising last year. Going into this year, they seem to be struggling a lot. But to have both Quartararo and Alex Rins, who again is only in his second round with Yamaha, was very, very impressive. Rins struggled with race pace. He sort of was with Quartararo in both races and then filtered back down the pack, which won't be pleasing for him. But, I mean, he did win in Texas last year, so Rins could be someone to watch, maybe. But for Quartararo, like many riders, was fortunate of the incidents in front of him.
Yeah,
you know, if Vinales had finished and the Benyarin Marquez, then it probably would have been 10th place for him. But at least there was the race pace was decent, a step forward with the time attack. Unfortunately, it doesn't sound like they got much testing in today. They were supposed to test, but Quartararo only got a handful of laps, so that won't be great for them, especially since Yamaha will want to prove to Quartararo, with his future in doubt, that they can move the project on. But I think he'll be reasonably happy, but they'll need to show that they can do it again at a different circuit.
As Rob said, Pete, there was a test plan for today in Portimao, and Quartararo put on Instagram in the afternoon that there was the toughest conditions for testing. There was no point. You only got 6 laps in. A bit of a head scratcher for them. It was a bit of a wasted time, but you know, I think going to Texas, he should be okay. It's a track he does like.
Yeah, it is. It is, and yeah, the test. What a shame. Yeah, the worst weather really for the whole weekend from sort of Wednesday onwards, when most of us arrived. It was a bit sort of cloudy and threatening, but yeah, certainly this morning waking up, puddles everywhere, all the way all the whole area really, all the way to Faro Airport. So yeah, shame for them. They didn't want to give too many details about what was planned for testing. I mean, the riders were asked, but I think they've been told not to say too much. But certainly there were some aero parts that were due, and Rins that you guys were speaking about, he was looking forward to just trying to work on maybe moving the bike more in his own direction in terms of the setup. You know, he's similar to Fabio, the way he rides the Quartararo, but he's starting to think now that maybe he's got to the limit. And I think he had some issues in the race, as Rob said, and that made him sort of think, yeah, you know, I need to sort of get the bike to turn better and things like that, things that just suit him. He has a sort of a specific style for the electronics, it seems, where he doesn't like to have a lot of electronics. He likes to have it all controlled with his hand, a bit old school, as someone said to him, and he sort of laughed and went, yeah. But, you know, so there's some differences there where he thinks he's got as far as he can sort of using the generic setup, if you like, for the bike. And now it's time to go with something that suits specifically his style. So that was what he was also hoping to work on today. But as Rob said, the weather has put an end to that. So, yeah, what a shame. I mean, this was going to be their first test really under the concessions, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that's now gone out the window. I don't know when the next one is. I don't know when that's planned. But, yeah, it just means that, you know, they're going to go into COTA without having the option, really, unless they want to take a gamble and test parts during the race weekend. They're going to have to delay the testing of the parts until they can arrange another private test, or probably after Jerez, where there's an official test. Maybe that's when they'll try these parts now.
We'll have to wait and see with Yamaha. Certainly more promise than Honda, and it's just interesting to see how these two manufacturers are flip-flopping each weekend. It's one to keep an eye on for sure, going into when we get to the European rounds especially. And we'll just focus on Moto2 quickly. Finally, we can say that Aaron Canet is a Moto2 race winner. Fantastic, Rob. I think 15-second places he's had in that class. And he looked great all weekend. He had great pace. But then it looked like Alonso Lopez was going to go and win again. Then he crashed out. And with Fermín Aldeguer also getting two long lap penalties for jumping the start, it seemed finally that Canet got the luck that he kind of deserved.
Yeah, it was an amazing ride to begin with, but amazing for Canet. Like you said, 15 second place finishes. I think he was long overdue this victory. There was sort of a nail biting moment in the closing laps when Aldeguer was really, really fast, and it looked like he was just gonna be able to get through the leading group fairly quickly. And I think he obviously used a lot of tire doing the laps, setting the lap times he was, but that was a little bit of a worry where we thought, oh, is Canet going to get caught at the end of the race? But the way he managed, first of all, the gap, and then like was able to really build his pace in the later laps, was really, really impressive. And to, you know, to hold his nerve, because he's crashed out of the lead on several occasions. So yeah, for Canet, just getting over that, not only winning, but to prove to himself that to not make a mistake is a big, big thing. And when he's in that situation going forward, you know that he won't be thinking about that anymore. So it was a really, really good ride, really impressive, and very much deserved.
And as Rob said, Pete, you know, Fermín Aldeguer did get the long lap penalties for jumping the start, but his pace was incredible to fight back through inside the top five. You know, it's a story of what could have been for him.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it wasn't, I mean, it was another unpredictable one, wasn't it? Second race of the Pirelli era. Not quite as chaotic as the first one, but certainly, as you say, tyre wear was a big thing, wasn't it, by the end of the race? And yeah, he just seemed, as you say, he seemed like he ran out of tyre, but a great ride up until that point. And, you know, guys, and also Joe Roberts on the podium, Gonzalez, yep. Manuel Gonzalez coming across. He was asked, I went to the post-race press conference, and he was asked about, of course, having the Pirelli experience from World Supersport. But he said, to be honest, it hasn't helped him as much as he hoped it would. It's just a different thing, different class and everything else. So You know, he's not really gained. He hoped he might gain a big advantage from having used the Pirellis before. But either way, he went very well, didn't he, all weekend? So he's another one to watch. And yeah, we're seeing lots of different guys up there at the moment, aren't we? Different bikes, different riders. Let's see when it all settles down. Who emerges at the front? But yeah, certainly we saw. You mentioned Alonso Lopez. He had the speed, didn't he? Fortunately, that mistake. The speed up guys are back up there. Aldeguer, that everyone's looking at as the favourite, showed that yeah, his speed is definitely there. But who knows what now? Canetta's finally broken the drought.
Yeah,
what this will do for him, isn't it? You know, now he's got that pressure off his back. You could see what it meant to him, didn't you? So now that's in the bag. Maybe he'll be he'll go up another level from now on.
Yeah, Pete, I agree. I think Moto2 is definitely the class. Just it actually has added another element, like you say, with the tyres. It was not a Qatar situation, but there were still some riders that struggled. Rob, Tony Arbolino had trouble again with the Pirellis. You know, I know it's an outside shot for Arbolino, but he was a candidate last year for maybe a MotoGP ride, but his season's not really went to plan so far.
No, like you said, there was times last year where he was linked to Ducati, and Paolo Cibatti even spoke about that during the season, that he was someone they were keeping an eye on, potentially for a Gresini ride. He fell away last year, and we sort of thought, you know, over the winter, reset, come again. He's in a great team, a team that, you know, knows how to win in that class. But his drop down the field yesterday was a bit of a shock. And I think for him, it seems like there's maybe a bit of a confidence crisis going on. He doesn't seem to be the Arbolino that we know. And he is really struggling. I don't know whether it's the Pirellis or if it's, like I said, a confidence thing, but he's just not delivering, and not necessarily in terms of wins, just being in the thick of it. He's not even challenging, which is a big surprise. And I think going forward, there's a lot of head scratching that him and the Mark VDS team will need to do.
Yeah, you mentioned confidence. I just want to talk about World Superbike quickly. There's someone in World Superbike who doesn't lack confidence, and that will be Toprak Raz Gadioglu. Two wins this weekend, and if you haven't seen it, in the Super Pole race on Sunday, he essentially done a Valentino Rossi on Alvaro Bautista, Rob, and it was one of the best races I have watched in years, and I think World Superbike is in such a great place at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when he made that move, I wasn't sure whether it was Toprak or Valentino Rossi that we were watching, because it was picture perfect, and it was a replica of what Rossi did to Lorenzo in 2009. Like you said, the Super Pole race was incredible. The battling between Toprak, Bautista, Iannone and Buliga was very, very special. You know, to have two rookies, but two riders who have immense talent in Buliga and Iannone, not backing down from the two riders that over the last couple of seasons have dominated World Superbike. And Toprak's performance in general, it's a bit like Acosta. Obviously, we've got a bigger sample size of Toprak's career and we know how special he is. But to overcome potential grip issues that we thought BMW might suffer at Catalunya, and to not only win race one and then the Super Pole race in the fashion that he did, just shows again that he's an incredible talent, and World Superbike is in a very special place right now. The racing is incredible, and to have so many bikes contending for the win and potentially being there at the front, and that's without talking about someone like Jonathan Rea. We're not even talking about Rea in contention for the win yet. World Superbike is arguably in a better place than it's ever been. The Super Pole race was incredible. And for anyone who doesn't watch World Superbike, maybe they need to. It's incredible, the racing. And obviously Bautista made a return to form as well, which was big for him and Ducati, and I think big for the series going forward.
Yeah, incredible, like Rob says. Pete, was there any sort of reaction from the MotoGP paddock to that World Superbike race on Sunday?
Well, there was lots of reaction in the media room, because, yeah, there was lots of sort of, and then cheering, and we're all sort of, right, it's the Superbike, yeah. So then everyone's running around with laptops to show what had just happened, and Yeah. I mean, what a fantastic move. So I've only seen the clip of the pass at the end, but I did try to ask Luca Marini if he happened to have seen the clip, you know, and Toprak doing what his brother had did, but quite rightly pointed out he was a bit busy on Sunday with other things. So he might have a look later. So yeah, maybe he's seen it by now. But I mean, great pass. I mean, it's a fast corner, isn't it? That final corner is a difficult place to pass on, and Bautista again, you know, the local hero, just as it was with Lorenzo and Rossi in 2009. So yeah, it looked like a great race. Yeah,
yes, it's just incredible. I think for a superbike, I don't think they realize how lucky they are to have Toprak, and you know, it's great for them to have such a charismatic, talented character that he is. And like I said, one day I hope he's a MotoGP, right? But I just want to see him in there. He is such a great guy, and you know, the support he has, especially in Turkey, you know, it's just great for motorbikes in general. But that's all for this week, guys. I hope you've enjoyed listening to the episode. Plenty of action that we've discussed. If you want more, head to Christ.net for everything MotoGP, World Superbike, even F1. That was actually a surprising thing this weekend as well. So we've got it all covered over there. Make sure to follow us on social media, subscribe to our YouTube channel, like the video, wherever you get your podcasts, follow, subscribe, you know the rest, and we will see you next time.